Okay. The goal of this morning's talk is to discuss cosmetic and reconstructive surgery in the eyes of halacha. First, we will discuss the sources for a number of underlying issues. Then we will discuss a number of related responsa. And then we will bring them together in the context of today's reality. But not today's technology. If someone want to do the old-fashioned next slide. Testing it before, obviously, did not solve the problem. Just hit the down button. Yeah, thank you. Okay. The terms plastic, cosmetic, and reconstructive surgery are often used loosely and interchangeably. Therefore, for the purpose of today's discussion, I would like to give the following definitions. As an overall topic, we are discussing using surgical techniques for the modification of physical appearance. Plastic surgery is a term generally used when discussing the repair of birth defects, removal of skin blemishes. As the purposes of the intervention has halakhic ramifications, I will primarily not use this term, but rather either say cosmetic surgery, where the goal is to enhance appearance, or reconstructive surgery, when the goal is to restore something that has been damaged. Next slide. The first issue to raise is, why should there be a problem at all? Is it not my body my own? Can I not decide what to do with it? This is, in fact, the overall Western medical, general medical ethic approach to elective surgery. Due to the ethical principle of autonomy, which we've heard so much about this weekend, I, as a mentally competent adult, can make decisions what to do with my body. There's some limits, such as suicide, even though that one's going down the slippery slope. But in general terms, cosmetic surgery fits well within these limits. The main discussion of the ethics of plastic surgery in the general ethical sphere is it really autonomous? Because if it's autonomous, it's okay. And some have actually argued that plastic surgery is not autonomous because of the amount of social pressure on women to change their body for where it can get them in life. Others have argued, while it is autonomous, there's still a question of how autonomous it is. It's rather interesting that a discussion of this is not something I was able to find in the halakhic literature or in the Jewish literature, but I think it is something that we need to put some thought to in terms of the amount of social pressure that goes on in terms of shidduchim and stuff like that. I know this issue has come up in the context of eating disorders, and anorexia in terms of the pressure on young women to fit into a size 2 before they get engaged. But I have not yet seen it in the context necessarily of cosmetic surgery. One of the people who studied this issue was someone by the name of Davis, and she interviewed many, many women who had undergone plastic surgery to try to find out why they went under it. And what I found very interesting is that it wasn't, at least in what the women themselves were saying, it was not because of something some man had said to them, but rather something some other woman had said to them. It was the ongoing negative comments that they were having about their body that led them to wanting to have the plastic surgery. And I think right now, when we're standing in the period of the 3 weeks, we really should take this into consideration in terms of how much halacha has to say about lashon hara, that this too can be a medical ethic issue. Next slide. From a Torah discussion of plastic and cosmetic and reconstructive surgery, we need to look at other concerns. The Torah includes a prohibition to injure others. As shown in the ruling in the Shulchan Aruch, Choshen Mishpat 4:21, this is learned as an Ad 40 argument from the rules of corporal punishment. As we recently learned in the Daf Yomi, should the agents of the court administer even one extra lash, the agent would be culpable. If the Torah is concerned about an extra lash for someone who's done something wrong, I mean, the person is getting makot not because they did something right, we're worried about giving them one extra lash, how much more so should we worry about any possible injury to one who is innocent? Next slide. Here are the full verses from Devarim 25. If a person has been judged to require lashes, it shall be given 40 lashes and not more. Next slide. Okay. Later in the same siman, the Shulchan Aruch rules that one is not permitted to injure oneself. Although should he do so, he does not have to pay himself damages. In this way, the Shulchan Aruch is adjudicating here regarding a Tannaitic dispute brought in by the Kama 91b. There in the Talmud, it brings two views. One view is that one can cause injury to himself, and the other view is that one cannot. And the Shulchan Aruch clearly sides with the view that one cannot. Next slide. The Rambam also rules that one cannot cause injury to oneself. However, his wording adds some additional nuances. First, he comes out and says, a person is forbidden to injure himself. Asor l'adam lechov ben basmo ben b'chaveiro. And then he adds an additional phrase, derech nitzayon. And there are actually two different versions. One is derech nitzayon, which means in the process of fighting. And the other is derech bizayon, which would mean in a degrading manner. And we'll come back to the implications of this phrase. Therefore, the Rambam is equating the seriousness of self-injury with the seriousness of injuring another, but he's also providing some sort of qualification leading to an opening that there may be some times that causing injury might in fact be allowed. Next slide. Okay, just so we can see the seriousness of causing injury, that one who does cause injury has to pay significant damages, as we learned from this verse in Shmot 21. When people fight and one hits a fellow with a stone or a fist and he does not die but becomes ill, if he gets up and walks on his staff, then the aggressor is not guilty of murder, but he must pay his lost wages and he will surely be healed. So we're all very familiar with the end of that verse, which is the Varpo Yirapeh, which has come up so much over the course of this weekend. But let's not forget the first part of it, which also says you're not supposed to be hitting anybody else. And as the Rambam learned, you're also not supposed to be injuring yourself. Next slide. The Talmud in Bava Kama 83b spells out five forms of damages. It's indicated also in your books in source number 2. This includes monetary compensation for the degree of damages inflicted, for the degree of suffering suffered, the medical expenses, lost wages, and embarrassment. Thus we see that causing injury is a significant halakha concern. As surgery involves some degree of injury, it is clear that some degree of consideration is needed before permitting any surgery that is not immediately life-threatening. Next slide. Okay. The verse in Shmot 21, however, also provides the source of the opposite argument. The key words now are v'rapo yirapeh. Okay, the physician has an obligation to heal. Next slide. The Midrash Halakha expounds on this verse in that it gives permission to the physician to heal, and the Shulchan Aruch rules that physicians have permission to heal. So we now have two potentially contradictory principles. We have the prohibition of self-injury, and we have a mandate to heal. Next. We now move on to another prohibition which may shed some light on our conflicting principles. The Torah, once again in Shmot 21, prohibits hitting a parent, ruling that this is a capital offense. The Shulchan Aruch rules that one should not even take a chance of coming close to this prohibition by causing a parent to bleed. Therefore, should a parent have a splinter, a child should not be the one to remove it as it might lead to bleeding. The Rama puts some leniency here if there is no one else to perform the task and if the parent is suffering. So we see here a potential caveat to the prohibition of injury. If the purpose of the injury is to prevent suffering, then at times it may be permitted. We'll now move on down here to a source in Tosfot in Tractate Shabbat. There it says that one can remove items of one's skin on Shabbat if they are causing him suffering. The definition the Tosfos gives to suffering is, even if he has no suffering other than he is embarrassed to go out in public, that is good enough suffering to allow us to do certain things in the context of Shabbos, where he's talking about, as there is no greater suffering than this. Now this phrase is obviously very relevant as to the reasons that people undergo cosmetic surgery. Next. There's one more principle that needs to be taken into consideration for our discussion, and this is the Torah's view of endangering oneself. A full discussion of this topic could be a session in its own right, but to touch on two key sources, we have a verse in Devarim 22:8 that requires building a fence around a roof to prevent falling off the roof. Next. And the Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishpat 4:27, following the exegesis of the Talmud, expands this prohibition in this verse to refer to any kind of danger, and rules that one who does not prevent danger is guilty of transgressing two commandments, both a positive commandment of building the fence, and a negative commandment of allowing the bloodshed. Next. We now come to a number of specific tshuvot regarding cosmetic surgery. The four classic responsa on these topics, there are four classic responsa on these topics, and they were all in the context of rhinoplasty. The first one, you also have this in your handouts in source number 7. The beginning of the responsa is by Rav Menashe Klein, who was a contemporary rabbi who founded the Ungar community. His tshuva begins with a quote of another responsa on the part of the Satmar Rebbe. Rav Halberstam argues that rhinoplasty should be forbidden, as it is a form of self-injury, and it involves potential risks. And we see where Rav Halberstam is taking those from in what we laid out as our introduction. Next. This is a continuation of Rav Klein's tshuva. He begs to disagree by pointing out the prohibition of self-injury does not apply in the case of medical treatment. He does not see a difference between treating a malformed nose and treating a broken leg in this regard. Slide 17. Next. As far as risk-taking, he says that in competent hands, this is considered a permitted degree of risk. Next. His son-in-law, Rav Breisch, similarly permits the procedure, bringing in yet another point. He says that the prohibition of self-injury does not apply in the face of suffering, bringing in the permission to injure a parent in the face of suffering. And he quotes the Tosfot that we reviewed to show that embarrassment to be seen in public is a form of suffering. And thus he rejects the argument that is prohibited, that this would be considered prohibited self-injury. Next. Rav Shlomo Zion Orbach took a similar approach. He stated that the intervention is to remove the suffering or embarrassment, it is permitted, although if it's totally for cosmetic reasons, it would be prohibited. In his opinion, it is not considered self-injury, as the person perceives it as self-improvement and not as self-injury. Next. Dayan Weiss points out that the Rambam limits self-injury to the cases of either bizayon or nitzayon. That's the Gersa changes that we looked at before. If it's a matter of either embarrassment, if the intent was either to embarrass or as part of a fight, which the surgery is clearly not. He, however, though, feels that the danger involved is a serious consideration, and he leaves it open if you would actually permit it halacha l'masa. Next. Rav Moshe Feinstein ruled that rhinoplasty is permitted, at least in the particular case that was presented to him, where there was a degree of embarrassment involved. He also points out that the Rambam does not include all cases of self-injury, but includes that caveat, that it needs to be for a purpose of either harm or embarrassment, which the surgery is clearly not. He brings a potential proof from a discussion of blemishes in people that in the Gemara that includes an extra finger. And the Gemara in Bracha discusses what happens if the extra digit is removed without stating that that removal is actually prohibited. And on a practical level, Rav Moshe was willing to permit the surgery. Next. A countervailing opinion is that of Rob Waldenberg. He brings in a new consideration, not brought up by anyone else, and that is that the permission to heal that is granted to physicians is only in the case of illness, and he doubts that this is considered an illness. He is, however, the only written posek that brings the issue of intervening with Hashem's design and what the person was supposed to look like into the discussion, and on a practical level, he ruled that cosmetic surgery is prohibited. Next. In addition to those issues discussed so far, there's an additional consideration for men. Based on the verse that men should not wear women's garments, the Talmud includes prohibitions for men to undergo a number of non-surgical cosmetic procedures that are done by women, such as dyeing their hair and shaving their underarms. Many have raised objections to commective surgery for men as an extension of this prohibition. Next. Interestingly, Rav Ovadia, in addition to permitting cosmetic surgery in general, when the person is feeling that they're having difficulty finding a mate due to their physical appearance, says that's true for men as well as for women. And the same was true of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He would permit it for men when they felt a pressing need. Okay, so just to summarize the issues that we've talked about, the issues that need to be taken into consideration when making those case-based decisions, which are the essence of Jewish medical ethics, is number one, the issue of self-injury, the Chabala, and we've seen reasons why it may not apply in the cases of surgery. First of all, if the person views it as self-improvement, if it's considered something that's a medical reason, if it's not meant to either embarrass or hurt. As far as the sakana, less of an issue if we're talking about in the hands of skilled professionals. We raise the issue of divine plan and we raise the issue of men. Next. We'll talk now for a minute about reconstructive. Okay, what we were talking so far now were the issues in the face when the purpose was for cosmetic reasons. But what about in reconstruction? In reconstruction, one can argue that this really is a medical purpose, because very often the reason that one is doing reconstructive surgery is to restore function. Okay, if someone is very injured in a car accident with their face, you're doing it not just because you want them to look more normal, but because you would also like their face to be able to function. If we're talking about skin grafting, we're talking about protection from infection. So the issue of saying this should not be permitted is probably not as serious in the face of cosmetic surgery, and therefore it's possible that even von Waldenberg would permit it in these kinds of situations. Next. And the last topic that I'll touch on has to do specifically with breast reconstruction, something that is comes up often in clinical practice. Women post-mastectomy who feel that they would feel better and have a more complete recovery if they had a more natural appearance afterwards and decide to undergo breast reconstruction. The breast reconstruction surgery is actually two different procedures, one of which is giving the shape of the breast, and that pretty much fits into what we talked about reconstruction in general. And the second one is providing something that looks like a nipple. The way that the nipple is done is by tattooing. Tattooing is itself a halachic issue. Based on this pasuk from Vayikra, we see that one is not allowed to tattoo. And there's a lot of discussions on this pretty short pasuk, what exactly the prohibition is. So one of the discussions is this only in the context of, at least on a Torah level, is this only in the context of avodah zarah, you know, as a form of idol worship? And if it's not in the form of idol worship, then it's only a derabbanah. It's only on a rabbinic level. If it's something that's on a rabbinic level, it is easier to permit it in the face of the suffering of the woman who wants to undergo the surgery. Another possibility is what exactly is the tattooing that is prohibited? Does it have to be something that is an actual picture? Does it have to be something that's actual letters? Does it have to be a Shem Hashem? These are all the issues that are busy discussed. And there are those who are more lenient and saying if you hold that it has to be letters, then obviously putting on a nipple-looking item is not an actual letter. And there's actually been a lot of discussion about this issue of tattooing in the face of breast reconstruction. A recent article, the latest volume of Asya, this is a Jewish medical ethics journal put out in Hebrew by Machon Schlesinger in Israel, has three articles on this topic in the latest issue. And the tendency seems to be going to permitting it. The questions also come up in the issue of permanent makeup, okay, which is a form of tattooing, maybe a less permanent form of tattooing than other forms of tattooing, but the issue has come up there as well. And as this is a new halachic issue informing, can't give you the bottom line yet, but there does seem that there is a push in the direction to finding reasons to permit it, and therefore certainly to permit it in the case of breast reconstruction. Less. So I'd just like to wish a refuat hanefesh, so people won't feel that they need this, as well as a refuat agufa. Okay, removing tattoos, I think, will go very much down on the issue of what we talked about, cosmetic surgery in general. In other words, if the tattoo is causing you embarrassment, there would be a reason to do it. And there have actually been actual true votes. They asked about someone who had a tattoo, and it was Choser B'tshuva, and it's, you know, so that would fit very much on the definitions that we talked about. Yes?
Other classes, like liposuction and breast enhancement,
The question was, is there anything different about other plastic surgery, things like liposuction, breast augmentation, etc.? While the written tshuva were written on rhinoplasty, I think the principles that we're learning out for them are similar. And then I think what the bottom line is, it depends what the reason for doing it is. If the reason for doing it is because that's, you know, I have nothing else to do with my $20,000 and I think that would be really cool, realize it's a real halachic issue. If you're talking about someone whose body image is so impacted that they're embarrassed to go out in public, that they feel that they can't date, that it's really causing them suffering, then there'd be room to permit that, the same as rhinoplasty. And it's not any more dangerous than that. Yes?
There are still several states in the United States that ban tattoo parlors.
Uh-huh.
Are they legal in Israel?
I think to the best of my knowledge, there is no law against tattooing in Israel. There's a certain amount of registration that has to go on, you know, to be licensed to do it, just from a health policy point of view. But I actually had a kid who came in recently with a henna tattoo, and her mother was like, totally, and was having an allergic reaction to it, and the mother was like, how did they let these things happen? And I'm thinking to myself, how did you let this happen?
Why do we allow ear piercings? Do we allow other piercings? And what about cornea, you know, like radial keratotomy, so that you don't have to wear glasses?
Okay, so these sources that I talked about have been discussed in the context of ear piercing as well. I think it's pretty socially acceptable and therefore pretty halachically acceptable to allow ear piercing because it's for the purposes of beauty. Okay? The risk is minimal. Society, right, I said ear piercing so far. Oh, okay, fine. Well, we'll start with easy things. The socially accepted ear piercing at this point has become relatively culturally accepted and therefore a form of beauty, so it's not a form of either bizayon. You're not doing it to harm the person. You're doing them to feel more beautiful. How many other places can and should be tattooed? I think you're in the, up here, sorry. You're still in the what's socially acceptable and taken to be a sign of beauty and stuff like that. But I don't have the final answer. These are what you need to be concerned about. And certainly to realize that it's not something you just wake up in the morning and do without thinking twice, I think is important. With the eyes, I mean, a lot of people undergo the keratotomy, I think, for functional reasons, not just for beauty reasons. You know, it's much easier to run without your glasses falling down your nose and stuff like that. So I think there you have an argument in terms of it being for a medical purpose. And the more experienced there is with the surgery and the less risky it gets, then you're in a better position to do it.
Yes.
I think it goes in the same categories. I don't see them being any different, okay? You're doing it, even just putting a needle in somebody is Kabbalah. I mean, we're talking about Hilchot Shabbos, for example. You can't take blood on Shabbos partially because you're causing a wound. It's a teeny tiny needle. What kind of wound? But that's the definition of a wound. The Botox would go into that as well. You know, there's a certain amount of risk in it, and it has to do with for what purpose. You're asking a very good question, okay? I don't think there's a bottom line answer, and in 20 years from now, the answer might be different, because there is some degree of, the concept is what's considered beautiful, okay? Things that would be considered beautiful are more allowed than things that would not be considered beautiful. And it can change. I mean, you can argue that, like, halacha doesn't change, but society changes, and therefore halacha has to deal with the new society, and therefore something that used to not be okay can conceivably be okay at some other point.